You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talking About podcast. I am Sean Kennedy. I am not joined by my usual co-host, Daniel Olinger. As any of you who follow him on social media might already know, Daniel is no longer with Liberty Ballers. He is very busy with his new scouting position at SIS Hoops. And in addition, he has his editor work at Northwestern. So with the school year getting going recently, he had a lot on his plate. He did leave the door open to return next summer. But for now, we don't have Daniel, unfortunately. So we wish him the best of luck with everything going forward. Personally, I really enjoyed doing this with him each and every week over the past year or so. So until then, I'm going to be getting on guests from both the Liberty Ballers site and outside the world of SB Nation, and try to bring on guests each week and, you know, just keep it varied and keep up the good Sixers talk that you've come to expect here at the Talking About pod. So this week we are happy to welcome Tom West, who is an associate editor at Liberty Ballers. He has been on the pod before, and he is our UK correspondent. So always glad to have some perspective from across the pond. So Tom, welcome to the pod. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me back on again.
Absolutely. So Tom, I wanted to get started with, you've been doing a film fix series for us at the site, just looking back at the 2020-21 season and some of the best plays and some of the best areas of growth for some of the Sixers on the roster. And I wanted to highlight this because with everything going on with Simmons right now and the trade saga, there's a real negative cloud over Sixers basketball right now. And additionally, the way the season ended with the Hawks loss and not reaching the expectations that the team had set for themselves and that the fan base had come to expect as the number one seed in what looked like a pretty wide open Eastern Conference. But there were good times last year. The team was the number one seed in the East, and a lot of great things happened. They had an MVP runner up in Joel Embiid. So I know Sixers basketball is kind of a trigger for a lot of people out there with just a lot of frustration and disappointment, but there were a lot of things to love. So I do like that your film fix series has been highlighting those. Is that kind of the reasoning why I know you did this last summer as well, but just kind of like, what is that? Did that play into why you wanted to do these things, to just kind of keep the positivity up at all?
Yeah, definitely partly why I brought it back this year. I mean, last year, the main motivation was just to try and kind of do something a little fun, just kind of break down different things with different Sixers players and stuff, like, you know, in the long sort of off-season wait before NBA came back. But this year, yeah, it was definitely partly because, yeah, like you said, there's been a lot of negativity on Sixers Twitter and just with the general discussion around the team, you know, with the way the playoffs ended, and really the whole kind of off-season chatter has been taken over just by Ben Simmons trade stuff. And, you know, where's he going to go? Why is he still on the team? Like, what are they going to trade him for? And all this sort of stuff. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to like highlight some of the positive stuff, because there were good things, like you said. There were a lot of different sort of developments with players who are already on the team, and things to sort of get into there. And I always like looking back through films. So yeah, I was trying to just keep things positive and hopefully maybe take a few people's minds off Ben Simmons stuff for a little bit.
Yeah, we could always use that. We don't need to be mocking the off-season shooting videos that pop up and like trolling Ferrari Instagram posts. We can kind of ignore that if we choose and focus on the good aspects of what has come to pass with the Sixers. And one of the really great young players still on the roster is Matisse Thybulle, who you highlight. The man is so good at defense, you did two separate film fixes, one to focus on his blocks and one to focus on his steals. You know, starting with the blocks post that you did, Thybulle was 19th in the entire NBA in blocks last season. And as you pointed out, he was first in among players that were 6'7" and under. And Sixers fans, I'm sure, were thrilled to see that Mikal Bridges was number two. 20-minute Sixer Mikal Bridges. So that would have been a great defensive wing pairing, but we don't need to go into that. But yeah, looking at some of the highlights you posted, you started off your video with the Devin Booker block in the corner where Thybulle navigated around like four screens and then just appeared out of nowhere to reject that shot. And one of my favorites from last year was the play against Chicago where he both blocked and stole the ball in a 2 second span. So
going through Larry Markkanen for a few seconds. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Markkanen was not aware that players could apparate at that speed. Just going through it, what were some of your favorite plays looking back at Thybulle's sequences there? And I know just going through what you wrote about in the piece, like what is it about Thybulle that just allows him to, I guess, be in seemingly two places at once or to get halfway across the court in a split second?
I mean, he kind of has every tool you'd want. I mean, if you're making the prototypical wing defender, I guess you could, you know, make him a couple of inches taller, but he really has everything. Like, he's got good size. He has really good wingspan. So he has great reach. He's really fast, changes direction really quickly. He's always turned on. Like, his awareness is terrific. Just the way he scans the floor, his anticipation, obviously he's got great timing. Like, to get as many blocks as he does at the perimeter, like, you have to be able to catch players off guard sometimes and kind of lure them into thinking that they're safe to shoot. It's very hard to block as many three-pointers as he does, but he still manages to do it. And just as well, like, I think I included in one of in the steals video, like, there was one play, I think it was against Washington, where he kind of ran off the court after contesting a three, was about 10 feet off the court, kind of hung around as he drifted back onto the court, and then just stole another pass because the player assumed he was completely out of the way. And I think that kind of, like, lulling players into thinking they're safe and then just using all those physical tools and his anticipation to kind of fly around and just kind of cover more ground than, like, most wing players can, just kind of lets him be super disruptive. And it's crazy to watch because it was, you know, I thought maybe when he did so much as a rookie already, just in terms of his defensive playmaking, it wouldn't be unreasonable to think he might kind of just stay at that kind of level and maybe cool off a tiny bit if players kind of knew what his tricks were and kind of how he operated. But he was even better in year two, obviously, more steals, more blocks, kind of controlled his gambling a little bit as well. Like, he didn't make as many bad fouls and things like that. Kind of picking his spots a little bit more wisely. So I think all of that together just makes him, a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, the players are so conditioned to, when they're running off these screens, if they get off them cleanly, they're just in their mind, they're like, oh, I'm open. Like, I got the screen was set, I came off it, and I rubbed directly off the screener. So my man has to be caught on the screen. So I'm open now. I don't see the guy in front of me. And then they go up and suddenly Matisse has somehow gotten around the screen and closed the 6 foot distance in the blink of an eye. And he's, you know, swatting the shot away. And there he goes off for a breakaway dunk or something. And you're right that we talked about 2 years ago with Brett, and Brett Brown would say that the biggest thing Matisse had to learn to do was to be, like, selectively chaotic, and the fouls were a bit of a concern, but you just kind of wrote that off because he was a rookie and he was still learning the nuances of the NBA game and where to pick his spots and everything. But yeah, he not only decreased his fouls committed this past year while playing about the same number of minutes. He, you know, significantly upped his defensive stats, as you pointed out. So, yeah, it was just really impressive the steps he made last season. So, yeah, we focused on his blocks. You also did a piece on his steals. So we should point out those that he was first among all NBA players in per 36 stats for both steals and deflections. You mentioned the coming out of bounds against Washington. He not only just jumps passing lanes, but he's a great guy coming from behind and kind of poking it away. And the fact that he's figured out how to do that perfectly without fouling most of the time is incredible. It was fun seeing him in the Olympic Games this past summer. That they call it a little less, they allow guys to be a little more physical than the NBA game. So seeing guys get locked up by Matisse when he had a little bit more leeway to like get in their grill and body them up a bit more, that really helped his steal game. So he had quite a few, like four or five steal games in the Olympics. I couldn't imagine if he had the similar leash with the NBA rules and everything. I don't know how much of the Olympic games you had a chance to watch, Tom.
Not as much as I wanted to, just because over here with the BBC, like, there wasn't as much coverage this year, and they didn't put on, because I think the coverage rights had changed from previous Olympics, so we couldn't pick any sport and then kind of flick between them all. So they didn't put on the basketball as much as I'd have liked. So it was tricky for me to watch much, but I did see little bits. And yeah, like you said, just having a little bit more leeway with how the rules are and with international basketball, like, he is so disruptive. I know he had that great block on Kevin Durant as well, I think. And yeah, it'd be crazy if he could kind of play with a little bit more freedom in the NBA, because pretty much the best case scenario, if Thibodeau is guarding you, is trying to kind of bait him into fouls. Like, you're not going to get by him easily off the dribble. You know, he's going to contest your jump as well. So if you can make him foul you, that's kind of, you know, that's a good result for an attacker. But yeah, if it's harder to draw fouls, then Thibodeau can be more disruptive. So yeah, it was fun to watch him in that setting whenever I could.
Yeah, that would, if we were to pick Nitz, that would be the one area of improvement we would wish for him going forward on the defensive end. Definitely had a few costly fouls in the postseason last year. But on the whole, a lot of great strides made by Matisse last year. So I think if a Simmons trade were to go down, you would, unless it was for an absolute superstar where they insisted on Matisse, you'd absolutely want to keep him around to kind of help fill the defensive void that Simmons leaving would leave. So yeah, great sophomore season from Matisse last year. And it was fun to take a look back at some of his best plays in your posts there. Another one wanted to look at was Joel Embiid, and you highlighted his shooting from his MVP runner up season. As you pointed out in the piece, he was third in mid-range shots made last year, and he made them at a 49.1% clip, which among the guys who took a few mid-range shots a game, he was sixth out of 34. So pretty impressive stuff for a 7-footer. Daniel and I on the pod at the beginning of last season, he was wondering how the Sixers offense could be so, like, Embiid centric, whether there was room for regression or whatever. I said, well, he's going to keep hitting half his shots. So I don't think we really need to worry about that. And I was like 10% joking, because no one could really guarantee that Joel would continue to be absolutely one of the most elite shooters in the NBA, but to his credit, he did it. And that was a big reason why he was the runner-up for the MVP award last year. And as you astutely analyzed, it was a big reason why he was able to continue to draw as many fouls as he did, because with guys having to respect his shot, they're not able to, you know, they really have no option as far as how do you defend Joel. Like if you get up in his face, he can back you down and draw fouls or whatever else. And then if you leave him open, you're just going to hit those. So do you see any way defenders can stop Joel Embiid? Because I sure don't.
No, like you said, he has a counter for everything now. Like I think at one point his mid-range efficiency, I think it was around halfway through the season, it was still at like 56% or something absolutely insane. It's still crazy how efficient he was by the end of the year, but yeah, just his shot making from mid-range, like going up a whole level, was so useful. Because yeah, like you said, if you play him too closely, he'll get fouls. Like he can just do that sweep move, swing his arms through and draw fouls so easily. If you play too close, you know, he can also drive past you or just bully you. So you really can't do anything. And I think when he is forced into mid-range, whether it's, you know, he can't get by his man, or if he, you know, only has a few seconds left on the shot clock and he's just trying to create a bit more space, I think just how well he used, you know, different moves from mid-range, whether he was, you know, he did that sort of Dirk one-legged fadeaway quite a few times. He hit quite a few step backs. Like his ability to create space, you know, in traffic was really impressive as well. And I think that was just another weapon for him, again, to kind of get a bit more space, operate better from mid-range, and just have like, yes, another counter against defenders who are already pretty hopeless trying to stop him. So I think with all that together, yeah, there's really not much you can do. I think I'll be interested to see how we can maintain that same shooting next season. Like it wouldn't surprise me if the efficiency dips a little bit just because it was so good last year. But I think, you know, with his, because I think he kind of improved his efficiency everywhere, like his free throw shooting, his 3-point shooting, his mid-range shooting was all up. So his touch has clearly kind of come a long way. So I think if you factor all that in, you know, it could be relatively sustainable, even if there's a little bit of a cool off. So yeah, I don't know how you defend Embiid at this point.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not something we have to worry about for sure. But if anything, I think there might be not specifically his mid-range shooting, but his overall shooting profile. He improved a lot from the 3-point line last year, and then he got even better in the postseason. So it's something he's continuously improved as his career has progressed. So I actually do think that there's room for him to maybe up the volume and increase his efficiency a little bit more from behind the arc, which would, you know, his overall true shooting percentage would see a boost, even if his mid-range, you know, slightly regressed a bit. But yeah, it's, the guy's a savant. I mean, he watches film and just like, he's a sponge. He incorporates it into his game. You brought up the Dirk shot, which definitely came in handy when he was playing on one leg with his bad knee towards the end of last season. Because hey, the Dirk shot, you only need one knee. So that was, that came in handy. Like he's whipped out the dream shake. Like the man does it all. It's really incredible to watch. So it's frustrating that the team's other star is unable to also incorporate those kind of shooting things into his game. But we're glad we have the one, the centerpiece here for the Sixers that is able to do it. All right. So, aside from Joel, the other guy you highlighted in one of your film fixes was Tyrese Maxey. You also wrote about him in our player profile series for the site. And Maxey's he might be the number one guy to watch for the Sixers heading into this season. I think the kind of assumption at the beginning of the offseason was that he might be included in the Simmons deal, because if they were to get back a Dame Lillard, like Maxey would be a sweetener to help the Sixers, you know, bridge that value gap between somebody like Dame and somebody like Ben. But now I think with the and this is something you wrote about in the profile, and I agree, is with those kind of stars, Lillard, Beal, those types seemingly off the table, and the Sixers are looking at, you know, more bridge deals where you bring in guys that aren't quite at the same value as Simmons, but you get a bunch of picks so that you can still stay in the mix. If Lillard or Beal or somebody else does become available at the trade deadline, you have, you know, the war chest of assets to make a competitive offer. if you're looking at something like that, then you absolutely would not include Maxey in a deal, because presumably you would have the best player currently that would be involved in such a transaction. So why would you need to also include Maxey, who would is a hugely positive asset due to his growth we saw in year one, and his favorable contract as a guy on a rookie deal that was selected in the 20s, and you know, everything else. So, you know, Maxey's a guy that if Simmons is dealt away, he could be the starting point guard potentially next year. So it really was good to take a look at, you know, all the progress he made last year, and his shooting profile improved. And then you brought up how it even increased even more in summer league, the couple games he played, when his volume really went up. He started doing a lot of off the dribble shots that we hadn't seen previously. And his defense also improved from the beginning of last season to the end, which was something Doc Rivers pointed out was a reason he was able to trust him more as part of the playoff rotation, was because the defense just hadn't been there for him at the beginning of the year. And by the end it was. So Tom, I guess, you know, we can discuss more of the intricate details of, you know, improvements he made, but if there was a situation where Maxey was to be the starter, do you think that's viable for the Sixers next season?
I think it is, in the sense that obviously if that would happen, it would be because Ben Simmons has been traded. So at that point, let's say you're probably bringing in, well, you have to bring in a better shooter than Ben Simmons. You're not going to get worse spacing from another ball handler. So in that sense, I think even though defenders aren't going to super respect Maxey's three ball, I think you probably have the space to be able to do that. I honestly think he would be up for that challenge. It would be a big ask, just given, you know, he's still, you know, such a young player and just coming into his second season. And last year, obviously, was different in that, you know, there was no summer league beforehand, short training camp, like there wasn't as much practice through the year, even though Maxey put in like an absolute ton of time by himself to train, like he still had to learn a lot of things on the fly. So, you know, he still has, you know, more things to learn, obviously like schematic stuff and whatnot. But I do think Maxey could kind of step up into that role, obviously depending on the other ball handlers potentially that the Sixers bring in. I do think Maxey could do that. I just think, like, we can get into the improvements and stuff, but I think he already showed, you know, a lot last year over the last couple of months of the season as he improved. And I think if you factor in him kind of growing more next season, which I believe he will, I'm sure he'll come back better after a good off season and having more time to work on his game. Like you mentioned, the 3-point shooting in summer league was encouraging to see, just how many he was willing to take off the dribble. That's kind of the biggest piece he's missing, is just that reliable pull-up jumper to kind of, you know, catch off defenders when they do go under screens against him, to try and push him away from his drives and his floaters. If he can add any more of that, I think that's the main thing he's probably missing. So I think playmaking wise would be the main challenge for him to step into more of a lead guard role. But I do think he'd have a shot at taking on that role and actually doing fairly well.
Yeah. The 3-point shot is definitely the last piece for him being like a 3-level scorer. He came into the league with the floater, which was highly advanced. And that's something that a lot of players never get down over the course of their whole career. I mean, that's a really advanced shot that he has from the mid-range there. And it takes a certain kind of special touch and ability to navigate angles and that, you know, just not everybody's able to do. And then we also, he always seemed to have a great feel for those kind of full speed running bank shots as he drove to the basket. And then as the year progressed, which was something you mentioned, he was able to, you know, start getting all the way to the rim a little bit more, which was good to see. But yeah, the 3-point shot is clearly the next step that he needs to take to be that complete 3-level scorer. And we did see it in summer league, which was great. Yeah, the playmaking, it's interesting. Like, is he going to be, you know, the quote unquote true point guard, or is he going to be like the microwave guy who can, you know, score at will and do everything you need to do to get buckets, but, you know, he's not going to be the true run the offense type. I know you mentioned that's definitely an area for improvement. Based on, you know, the film you watched and everything, were there signs that he did start developing that aspect of his game over the past year?
I think he did a bit, yeah. I think it's still something to keep working on moving forward. I know that's something that, you know, Doc and Tyrese both mentioned last season. But yeah, no, I do think he did. I think, I mean, his turnovers were really low, especially for a rookie. Like, that was impressive. Just his assist to turnover rate, especially late in the season, was really good. He doesn't force too many bad reads. Like, he doesn't make too many really advanced reads. Like, you're not going to be seeing him making tons of, you know, crazy skip passes and things out of pick and rolls and just really contorting defenses with his passing. But he still makes some pretty good reads. Like, he can make some skip passes, you know, on the move when he gets downhill. He can make some sort of nifty dump off passes around the basket. And yeah, he doesn't force too much stuff. Like, he doesn't make too many bad decisions, which is encouraging. So I'd still have questions about him being a kind of lead playmaker, if that was kind of his role as point guard. But I think if you have, I mean, I have no idea what the Sixers could get for Ben Simmons yet. Like, we don't know what the team's going to look like. But if you have another guy you can sort of pair with him in the backcourt who also offers a bit of playmaking, and you can kind of use the two together, then that would be really useful. I think that's kind of the better scenario, rather than just asking Maxey to be the lead point guard, the lead playmaker, and then just have kind of complementary pieces around him, as well as Embiid and obviously Tobias. But yeah, no, I do think there was some progression there. And yeah, I'd expect him to keep sort of growing that area of his game next season, just again, because I think he works hard enough. He studies so much film. There was progression there already. And I think just if you just give him some time and a bit more time to get used to the NBA, I think that will sort of keep coming along.
Yeah, no one has ever disputed Tyrese's work ethic. He's come in from a day one with an absolutely positive attitude. And, you know, as you just said, he didn't have a rookie offseason, really. So this was his first true offseason. They gave him the couple games in summer league and working with the summer league team to, you know, take on that role of, hey, you're going to be the guy that is the playmaker and run the offense. And, you know, we'll continue to see how he looks in that role throughout training camp and the preseason when he starts facing a higher level of competition than you would face in Vegas. But yeah, there's, you know, as we bring up these questions and kind of, you know, nitpick areas of his game, you know, just keep in mind that everything has been highly encouraging from Tyrese Maxey. And you're talking about a guy in his second league who was a younger prospect in the draft, or his second year in the league, and was a younger prospect in the draft to begin with, came in under, you know, circumstances that had never been seen in the league before, because we'd never been trying to get a season undergoing while a global pandemic was going on before. And, you know, he's kind of cleared every bar you would hope that he would at this stage of his career. So yeah, just hopefully he continues to do so, and the Sixers, you know, keep him in house, and they're able to, you know, have a long and prosperous career together. One other young guy who participated in Summer League, and you recently did a profile on the site, was Isaiah Joe, who, you know, didn't play as much of a role with the Sixers last year as Maxey did, which was to be expected. He was a second round pick, whereas Maxey was a first round pick. And so Joe spent a lot more time in Delaware, but he did, and you highlighted in your profile that there was a stretch in January last year when they were a little bit struck by injuries, and Joe started actually being a semi-regular part of the rotation. And he showed you a lot to like. He's really a high volume 3-point shooter, which especially last year with Simmons on the roster, and that's incredibly valuable. Just a guy who can be an elite floor spacer, and really has range from like 28 feet, which that added couple line, the up a couple feet out to what the Sixers dubbed their 4-point line when they put that 4-point line up a couple feet beyond the arc at the practice facility. So I have a feeling Joe spends a lot of time at the 4-point line there. he's a guy that just really opens up stuff for the offense. And not only that, but as you mentioned in your profile that he looked a lot better as a rookie than you would have expected on the defensive end. And he had the honorary Ersan Ilyasova belt for taking charges probably on the team last year.
Yeah.
really showed good instincts for that. I don't know. What are your expectations going into the season for Joe? Because unlike Maxey, who you could see a situation where he's potentially starting if Simmons is dealt and they don't bring back a point guard in the deal, Joe doesn't really have a clear path to minutes. Like, they brought back both Danny Green and Furkan Korkmaz to kind of fill those wing position. And, Seth Curry is still penciled in as a starter. And you just don't know, barring injuries, really when he's going to see the court on a consistent basis. But I don't know. You know, what do you see for Joe going forward?
Yeah, I think it's tricky because, like you said, the Sixers have kind of filled out their wing positions fairly well by keeping Green and Korkmaz. And I think if the Sixers do trade Simmons for, you know, a bunch of picks and maybe a couple of role players, I think, you know, it's quite likely those are going to be guards and wings, or at least ideally that would be the case for the Sixers, in which case, if that add even more vets on the wing, I think it does become tricky for Isaiah Joe to kind of get minutes. But I think, you know, at least with the team right now, and depending on who they bring back and what positions they're at, I do think he can compete, and I think he'd at least be ready for a few more minutes if he can get them. I think he can at least kind of compete around the Korkmaz level of the rotation. Mainly because, like you said, I think his defensive tools are good. Like, Korkmaz has improved on that end, you know, through his career. He's kind of made gradual improvements there. But Joe definitely does have an edge just with his kind of quickness on the ball. He's competitive there, even though he's got a skinny build. And I think his instincts were just really sharp for a rookie. Like, his rotations, kind of just his awareness of knowing where to be and when, and he had some kind of nice help rotations just kind of coming under the basket and deterring opponents on cuts and drives and stuff. I think a lot of that stuff is better than you'd expect for a rookie. And I know that's something that Doc Rivers talked about a bit last year when Joe did get playing time. His defense in particular impressed Doc. So I think if you factor in him maybe being a better defender than Korkmaz and obviously maintaining the shooting ability, which, you know, like you said, you know, he can shoot from, you know, a few feet beyond the arc. Like, he's really good off movement. He's incredibly confident. Like, from day one, he was happy to just let it fly as a rookie, which is exactly what the Sixers need. So I think I could see him being, I can see him being good enough basically to play more minutes. I'm just not sure he'll get them if the Sixers do get a couple more vets back. And those are the guys that Doc would probably preference. So it kind of depends on how the rotation shakes out, but I do think he'll be ready to do more if possible.
Yeah, it is tricky. But everything is very much up in the air with the Sixers roster. We don't know how many pieces will be involved in an eventual Ben Simmons deal. And yeah, maybe a spot opens up. And as you said, Joe looks poised to seize any opportunity that comes his way, especially after a good summer league showing as well, where he was, you know, he wasn't quite Maxey level too good for summer league, but he definitely looked like one of the better players on the court in the games that he participated in, and showed off some increased playmaking skills that we hadn't really seen before from him. So, you know, another arrow up for Isaiah Joe, who is another recent Sixers draft pick that has performed above slot, I would say. So just given the track record of the Sixers front office in the draft recently, you have to be hopeful that the guys they selected this year, or at least Jaden Springer, should be able to help the team somewhere down the road, because it seems like they know what they're doing when evaluating prospects. All right, so we've been very positive for over a half hour now. So I think it's probably time to level things out by discussing the Ben Simmons situation, which is the overwhelming topic of the Sixers offseason right now. You know, in the past few weeks, Simmons, and just to preface this for the listeners, I'm going to say, like, Simmons said things, but it generally means that Simmons's representation said them, or that a Brian Windhorst type reported that a Simmons camp has been saying things. But just for the simplicity of the discussion, I'm just going to say like Simmons said them, even though we didn't never actually heard the words come out of Simmons's mouth, but just wanted to mention that. So, but in the past few weeks, Simmons has said that he wants to be traded. He's not reporting to training camp. And also in the last few days, it's not his job to increase his trade value, basically implying that he's not going to report to camp just to help grease the wheels of a trade. And he wouldn't be like, he's not going to play the first 10 games of the regular season and average 12-8-8 or whatever, so that teams are reminded that he is one of the better players in the league and he is an all-star and everything else, just to help the Sixers get a better return. So that pretty humorously led to Shaq and Charles Barkley kind of dunking on him on a recent around the NBA pod where Shaq basically said, Ben, you're not that good. Like, don't, you're not in a position where you should really be saying these kind of things. So I don't, like, at this point, I've gone from Ben Simmons should only be traded if they're getting a star in return to just make sure you get enough picks to keep you in the running if a star becomes available later. I'm just exhausted by the whole thing. I just want to discuss basketball players in Philadelphia that want to be playing in Philadelphia and kind of move on from this situation. So Tom, you're a little more removed from it. You're not around the Philadelphia area to be hearing a lot of the discussions that are going on, but you know, you are ensconced in Sixers Twitter. So I imagine you still get a fair bit of it via social media and everything else. But what are your feelings currently on the whole saga?
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah, I definitely see plenty of Ben Simmons related frustration. Yeah, I think I'm kind of in a similar position to you. I think early in the offseason when, you know, the idea was that they want to get a star return, which is obviously what they need, I was kind of similar in the sense that I thought, you know, trading Ben Simmons is kind of your best way to bringing that star guard in. Like, you don't have, you're not going to have the money through free agency. You don't have anything more valuable that you're going to be trading. Like, he is the best piece to send out in order to bring in that ideally high-level perimeter creator, you know, passer, scorer, shooter that you want next to Embiid and the rest of the team. But earlier in the offseason, it looked like there might be the potential for that. You know, it seemed a bit more likely a while ago that Dame may actually be asking out. You know, there was at least the idea that, oh, maybe Zach LaVine could become available or Bradley Beal could become available. But, you know, now the Bulls have made a bunch of moves. They're obviously setting their team. Dame, at least for now, seems to be kind of quite set on trying things out in Portland still. And obviously, Beal, we've not heard anything to indicate that he is eager to ask out, in which case, with no stars on the market, like, the Sixers don't really have any amazing options out there to get that guy, that kind of high-level creator right now. In which case, I think, you know, one of those will come available in the season. Like, stars do become available, like, it happens. The Sixers just want to keep themselves positioned to do so. So I think if you can move Simmons now, kind of reset the team a bit, get him out of there because the situation is obviously not working for anyone right now. I don't necessarily see him playing and then suddenly drastically raising his value. If you can trade him, I think, for role players, and you know, guys that can at least contribute now, even if they're not as good as Simmons, and then bring in a bunch of picks, I think that's kind of the package that the Sixers need to look at. The issue there is then obviously, you know, they are going to be downgrading for the regular season. Like, it's important to remember that, I know Sixers fans are angry, but like, Ben Simmons is still really good. And if they're trading him now, it's not going to be for a star or probably for any individual player who is, you know, single-handedly better than Simmons, in which case, you know, they might be getting worse for the short term. You know, they're going to miss his defense a lot. Like, he's still bringing so many things to the table. Through the regular season, like, they will miss that. But I think if, you know, they need to move on, I think going for the kind of pick-heavy package is the best way that they can kind of add even more assets to the sort of treasure chest and then kind of stay open if a star does ask out, you know, in the season. And then they'll have, you know, the young guys like, you know, Thibault, Maxey, ideally they keep him, but, you know, Maxey, and then, you know, even more picks to kind of play with when a star does or if they do become available, I think that's probably the way to go right now, just with the kind of options that are available to them on the market and the teams that are interested in trying to trade for Simmons.
Yeah, you said to remind, like, Simmons is still a very good player. I know Sixers fans don't want to hear it. And especially in the regular season, you know, in the past, Simmons's struggles have mostly been postseason when defenses tighten up and you have a 7-game series to kind of, you know, really study the film and diagnose the ideal ways to stop your opponents. That's when Simmons's flaws really become magnified. In the regular season, like, he's a huge floor raiser. Like, when you're Detroit's coming in on the for a second their second game in two nights or something, and Simmons is running up and down the court in transition and wrecking havoc on the defensive end, like, he's a huge difference maker. And the Sixers are, if they do trade him prior to the season, they're going to miss having him available for the regular season. Like, I don't think, barring something extreme, like suddenly them trading for Dame as part of a Simmons package, which no one expects anymore, like, they're definitely going to be a worse regular season team, I think, than they were last year with Simmons' departure. So I think you just have, as a Sixers fan, you just have to come to terms with, well, look, Milwaukee's the defending champs. Brooklyn is, you know, arguably the most talented team in the league, and they made significant strides to flush out the back end of their rotation, adding guys like Patty Mills, Paul Millsap, etc., that they look to be the odds-on favorite to come out of the East. Like, hey, maybe the Sixers just can't be thinking we have to maximize our chances in the regular season of finishing atop the East, and we just got to salvage the Simmons situation to the best of our ability to set ourselves up as good as we can for the future. And that's not to say you're throwing the season away. You're going to try to make a deal that keeps you right, you know, somewhere in the 3-6 range in the East. And but then you're still getting those picks to keep yourself competitive for the future, whether that's through having the assets to make that trade for a star that becomes available, or you can use those picks down the road, or either yourself or as part of another trade to improve your roster down the road. So it's just not a situation where you're not going to trade Simmons and be a better team for it in the short term. Like, you have to, as Sam Hinkie would say, take the longest view in the room with this whole thing. And at this point, there's not a real clear path to how they would do that, which is probably the most frustrating thing, just because the disconnect between Simmons's value and the offers that are seemingly available is pretty wide at this point, and that's making it tough for Daryl Morey to navigate that situation. So we'll see what happens, but we do want to mention two teams that have been kind of linked to Simmons strongly recently. You know, teams have come and gone all off season. Obviously Portland originally with McCollum, and that didn't seem like enough for the Sixers, and then Lillard is not going anywhere, so it seems like the Sixers don't have enough to get Lillard at this point, so they're off the table. The Warriors were linked at one point, but it seems like they were never really interested in getting involved for the type of package Daryl was looking for. But two teams have been strongly linked in recent days. That's Cleveland and Minnesota, both teams that you know, didn't make the playoffs last season, towards the bottom of the standings. So Simmons would definitely represent a floor raiser for them to maybe help them leap up into that back of the playoff picture hunt. So that would be appealing to those franchises. And from the Sixers perspective, like, if those teams sent back a bunch of picks, those would be more valuable than if, say, a Golden State sent you future picks, where you expect Golden State to be among the better teams in the league if they stayed healthy and everything else. Tom, what were your thoughts on those two destinations as a trade partner for the Sixers, and do you have a preference for if they had to do a deal with one of those two teams, whether it would be Cleveland or Minnesota, which you would prefer?
I mean, it's tricky because it's still unclear entirely what pieces would be on the table from both of those teams. I think in terms of an individual player, I think the Cavs are the most interesting because just because of their two guards. I think if you can get Darius Garland or Colin Sexton, I'd maybe lean Garland just for the better playmaking. You can get a new creator in that can help offensively. They're going to fit better than Simmons in that regard, at least, even though they're not as good overall as he is. You know, they can both give you a bit more driving, a bit more creation, just some general kind of scoring punch and the kind of perimeter creation that was missing last year. Obviously, you know, Maxey helped and Tobias took a step forward, which was really helpful, but that's still the main thing that they're missing. So that's intriguing. And then I think the Timberwolves, based on, you know, our friends at the Gastro Enteritis Blues podcast, had John Krasinski on from The Athletic, and he was saying that right now it seems like the Timberwolves are kind of the most aggressive team in the market for Ben Simmons. They're not necessarily close to a deal with terms of what the Sixers would like in return, but if they are, you know, the most interested team, then potentially that at least could lead to them offering more. And I think they do have some pieces that are intriguing, like Jaden McDaniels is a good young player that I think would be really good for the Sixers, just giving them some kind of athletic defense and size. There's another backup forward that would be really useful for them. I really like his potential. And then obviously you've got like Malik Beasley, who could bring some more kind of helpful shooting and kind of operate off movement and stuff. And, you know, Patrick Beverley, for instance, like another guard who could help kind of complementary piece, you know, spotting up as a shooter, a little bit of complementary ball handling, and then obviously some point of attack defense. So I could see the Timberwolves putting together kind of a package of kind of multiple players and picks that would be intriguing. But I think, yeah, it's just hard to know like how good these offers are going to be. If you can get a Cavs package with, you know, one of their star guards, you know, another player or two as filler and then some picks, I think that would probably be the way to go. But it's just tricky depending on exactly how badly these teams want Simmons. But like you said, you know, they both have motive for wanting him. Like, he's still a really good player. They're both teams that would like to make the playoffs, and he could kind of help raise their floor in that regard. So I think they both have some interesting things, at least, that they could offer.
Yeah, I think in regard to Darius Garland, I think if he was made available, that's a deal the Sixers would do in an instant.
Yeah.
But all the indications have been that Garland is kind of off the table. He's a guy that was involved in Team USA workouts. He's really young. He has a great 3-point shot. Looks to be, you know, developing as a lead playmaker really well, and still has 1 or 2 years left on his rookie deal. So he's very cost effective for a franchise that, you know, is taking the long view as far as the rebuild, like Cleveland is. So I don't see him being made available. Sexton, I think there definitely could be something to be worked out there, because he would be the odd man out if they build around Garland as their one. But a couple things give me pause with Sexton. Yes, he is a very good offensive player, continues to improve. He's a good spot up 3-point shooter, which would be helpful. But he's not a good defensive player by any means. And I'd be worried, like, if you get into the playoffs, if you're having him as one of your main pieces, you know, that feels like it'd be a situation that would be exploited by opposing teams in the playoffs. And you're going to have to make a decision on this contract. So he's due to get an extension soon. So either you bring him on with the idea that, like, hey, this is a really good young player that a lot of teams in the league would be interested in, and we could trade him for something. But if you're not able to do that, or if you're not doing this initial deal with that in mind, then you're going to have to end up paying him a lot of money. And then suddenly he's locked in as part of your core. And that goes back to my initial concern, where you have this guy making a lot of money as part of your core, that if the postseason rolls around, he's not a valuable two-way player. And that just gives me pause. So I don't know. I think it would be fine if there was a deal that came back with Sexton as the return centerpiece and a bunch of picks, because I still think that would give you great flexibility. I think there could, like, if a star like Beal or whoever was made available, you could send Sexton back as the main guy, and another team would probably be okay with that, because he does have bring a lot to the table, and he is an improving offensive player and young, and there's a lot to be excited about with regard to him. But yeah, I don't know, that'd be tricky, because then that kind of puts you on the clock as far as you either got to deal him again, or this is going to be the guy that's part of your franchise for the next 6 to 8 years. And I'm just not ready to push my chips in on Colin Sexton being that guy. Minnesota, yeah, it's like the Sixers have no interest in D'Angelo Russell, reportedly, which I agree with. I don't really think he's much of a net positive player. He's not a good defender. He doesn't draw free throws at a high rate. I don't think he really would help the team substantially. So if you're getting back someone like Jaden McDaniels if McDaniels is your best young player you're getting back in the deal, yeah, he could be good. He has a lot of tools that you like, but it's very unproven, very raw. I don't know how much he would help you in the short term. And obviously guys like Beverly and Beasley would be, you know, helpful pieces, but they're not guys that I'd be like, okay, I feel good about them being in the starting lineup for a postseason team. So I don't know whether that sort of deal would be very helpful in the short term. I think the team would take a significant step back from where they were last year. So it would just have to be with Minnesota, like, how many picks are they willing to give up? Like, if they're willing to give up 2 picks and 2 swaps, maybe you think about it, because then that's a pretty good arsenal to go into a trade discussion later in the year if a star does become available, if you have that kind of package available to throw in. So I don't know. It is very tricky. We're not sure. We're not sure exactly what Darryl wants, like what he's willing to concede to in a deal. He asked for the moon to begin with, and no one was willing to even come close to the sort of things he was asking for. So we're just not sure how far he's willing to come down from his demands in a Ben Simmons deal. So it makes it tricky to navigate where we think this will end up. But Tom, I appreciate you joining the pod this week. It was good to have some positive Sixers talk for at least 30 to 40 minutes. There hasn't been a lot of it this year, and training camp is less than 3 weeks away. How does that feel weird to you? Are you ready for another Sixers basketball season? Are you just in disbelief that we're that close to more Sixers basketball?
I'm almost there to being ready. I think, like, I was quite enjoying the off season and just sort of switching off from basketball for a while. Like, I've been offline more this summer, like not been on Twitter as much. It's been quite nice to kind of just switch off more. But yeah, now that training camp is getting close and maybe this Simmons trade is finally going to happen relatively soon, and we can just like move on from all of that and just focus on basketball again. I'm getting more ready now and kind of looking forward to things starting up again. I'll enjoy the next couple of weeks, and then yeah, we'll try and get back into it all and see what happens.
Yeah, there's going to be the day or two when the trade happens and it's just complete chaos, and then we're all going to be relaxed for a while, and then the regular season's going to start, and Simmons is going to be putting up like 18, 8, and 10 every night for some team like Cleveland, where he can just have the ball in his hands at all times, and then the other half of the Sixers fan base is the staunch Simmons defenders are going to be like, oh, Darryl traded him for peanuts. What a franchise ruining move. So then we'll have that to be anxious about. So I'm not looking forward to that, because you know it's coming. But
it's 100% coming.
Prepare yourselves now, listeners. Yeah. So Sixers basketball a few weeks away. It will be good to see those guys back out on the court. But until then, we will be back next week. I'll have another guest on the Talking About podcast. Tom, thank you for joining us this week in the the inaugural episode of the new format with me as the new host here without Daniel. So appreciate you coming on, and we hope to have you back on the pod again soon.
Yeah, of course, anytime. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Take care, everybody. We will talk to you next week.